Are you ready, Adam?
Uh-huh.
Armando?
Yeah.
Nairman?
Okay.
All right, fellas. It's the week of April. It's the week of April 15. It's the Prong News Podcast, and I'm glad you are back again here with me. It's a matter of fact that we're never whack, and we're gonna have some fun. And Sheena's in the corner, let no one ignore, because she thinks she's the passionate one. Oh, yeah! It was like lightning. Everybody was fighting, but the music was soothing, and they all started grooving. Man at the back said, everyone attack, and it turned into a punk newscast. And the girl in the corner said, boy, I'm gonna warn you to turn into a punk newscast. Punk newscast. Punk newscast. Punk newscast. Punk newscast. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast, and unfortunately we're going to have to open today's podcast on sort of a downer, a really big downer. Unfortunately, fellow Punk Newser and member of Red Tape Parade, Waz Kenobi, has passed away due to cancer. Waz was a pretty great guy. He always had positive interactions with us at Punk News. He did some great writing for us and also a lot of behind-the-scenes suggestions. And plus, he was in Red Tape Parade, which was a pretty cool band. It's just a really sad thing. He was a fairly young guy. I think he was about 30, and he realized he had cancer about 6 months ago or so, and he passed away just last week or this week, and so it's really sad, and we're really bummed out about it at Punk News. We should just dedicate this podcast to Waz, because what else can we say? But we're really sad that he's gone, and that hopefully his positive spirit will continue onward, and that's all we have to say about that, unfortunately. So I think we'll start this podcast by playing a song by Red Tape Parade, and then when we come back, we'll start the podcast properly. So this is a song by Red Tape Parade, and it is called Directed by Alan Smithy with Waz on vocals. Waz, R.I.P.
Not really mine, like something I will never own, or at least never deserve.
we're back, and as always, I am your Punk News Podcast announcer for this week, features editor, John Gentile. Last week's podcast was wild and wacky, but the people were clear. The people do not want Armando talking about what he would do if he could get to take Adele out on a date. The people do not want Greg talking about how he enlightens children's hearts through his musical teachings. And the people do not want to hear about my woman problems. No. The punk rock is serious stuff, and the people want it to be treated with the appropriate gravitas. That's right. This week, we've brought in a man of logic, a man of integrity, a man of business, a man of respectability. This week, we've brought in Punk News Managing Editor Adam White. Adam, how are you doing today?
All you needed to say was a man of the North.
That's true. Adam White is in Canada, as a lot of people know. And actually, speaking of Canadian babies, Adam's got a blog called Dad's Not Punk, which is him, Rich Verducci. Who else is on your blog, Adam?
Joe Poloni, right?
Joe Poloni.
Yeah, Joe Poloni. Jordan Baker from Pace Punk is hanging out there. And Ben Connolly, who's a Punk News guy, has been hanging out there. And everyone writes way more than I do, so I can't even call it really my blog. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I recommend it for even people that don't have a baby, because it's just really funny to hear these guys. Well, I would say about 50% of it deals with, like, doo-doo, but the other 50% is pretty good, too. Adam, has your perspective on life changed now that you've had a baby? Or that you and your wife have had a baby?
You know what? I'm going to probably buck the trend of what most people say about this, and not really. I mean, not in terms of, like, any kind of, like, major philosophical change or you know, looking at the way that the world, you know, hinges all of a sudden differently. I mean, we have been prepared by everyone basically telling us that our lives were over for the fact that our lives were over. So that's not really, that wasn't really a shock to us. Like, yeah, having a baby is a shit ton of work. And it, you know, it's amazing and it sucks and all that together, right? So that's, I don't know, that wasn't something that, like, blindsided us. So I don't think that it gives from that perspective. But it also hasn't been from the perspective of, like, oh, I have a child now. I am now a, you know, staunchly fiscal conservative. Like, it didn't, like, change all of a sudden our, you know, the way that we look at the world, I think. One of the things that I found is that stuff about children can make me very sad now. And like, more so than it probably would have earlier, like stories of, like, children in peril or anything like that, where I'm just like, oh my God, that's horrible. I don't know, like, that hits me more than it would have before. But I don't know. It hasn't, like, I haven't, like, you know, shaved my head and gone and joined, you know,
the bald man club.
I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. I was going to say, like, corporate America, or I don't know, but I don't even know what I was going to say. It hasn't, you know, it hasn't been one of those things where, like, all of a sudden it was like a religious awakening where, like, everything we knew is wrong. Our whole perspective has changed. Like, it hasn't been that. So, yeah, there you go. Kids, you can have kids and not, it won't necessarily completely wreck your outlook.
Well, Adam, that's the exact reason we brought you in. That was a very serious, very well thought out answer, and I appreciate that. But for every yin, there must be a yang. For every tragedy, there must be a comedy. For every Stevie, there must be a wonder. So that's why to round out the podcast, we've brought in a man of entropy, a man of deception, a man of anarchy, a man of disgrace. Punk News editor Armando Olivas. Armando, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I will say this much. I'm kind of surprised you didn't say for every Carl, there is an Urkel.
That's true. Do you see yourself as a Carl, or do you see yourself as an Urkel? Or a Stefan?
I'm an Urkel 90% of the time, and Stefan the other 10.
Listen, do you think it was a cruel of, like, Laura to string Steve along for all those years? Should she just have said, Steve, it's really not going to happen?
But at the end, it did end up happening.
Is there a lesson to be taken from that?
Yes and no. I think overall, people shouldn't be that desperate and should try and move on. But as far as TV goes, or even movies, if you're persistent enough, chances are you'll get your way, so depending on how the writers feel.
Are you saying that between women and men, and men and men and women and women, dogged but polite persistence sometimes pays off in the end?
Only if there's a camera in front of you.
I think that's true. I think that's very true. And with us always is the international man of mystery, history, and wizardry, the warlock of the recording dock, and dude who knows more about babes than Dr. Spock, Sound guy Nariman, let us hear some of your robotic magics.
Please specify how you would like to proceed, sir.
And with that, we'll start today's Punk News Podcast. The first story in today's Punk News Podcast was quite surprising, but it looks like the Punk News people were pretty positive to it. Laura Jane Grace of Against Me has just co-written a song with Joan Jett of the Blackhearts and the Runaways, and we've basically been punk rock since before punk rock even existed. The track is called Soulmate to Strangers. They played it live, and I gotta say, man, I liked it. I liked the song a whole lot. What did you guys think of this new jam with Laura Jane Grace and Joan Jett?
You know what? I've had fun whenever I've seen Joan Jett recently, and she played, she played Warped Tour a few years ago. It was probably like 5 years ago or something. Time is all fucked up for me, but yeah. And you know what? I enjoyed watching her. I enjoyed seeing her play the stuff. I mean, like, she still has stage presence. She still has, you know, like, her band was pretty kick-ass when I saw her. I'm sure it still is today. You know, there was a lot of relevance there. It wasn't like a nostalgia act that she was doing. It wasn't like Joan Jett's going to play a bunch of Runaways classics or something like that. It was, you know, it was her playing, you know, stuff that mattered, stuff that she had written recently, and it played very well. So, you know, seeing Laura Jane play with her and play a song that she put together is cool. It's, you know, and the song was good, so that works. You know, we can't say quite as much about the videography, but that was a little weird. I don't know. Did you guys?
Yeah, Laura Jane Grace like isn't even in the video, really, right?
Yeah, but the thing is that the bass player for the Blackhearts, they keep focusing on her, like as if you know, as if the person filming it is like, this is Laura Jane, because they kept panning between the bass player and Joan. Honestly, and I'm like, that's not her.
Maybe they didn't know, to tell you the truth, because honestly, like, Joan Jett fans are of and one or even two generations before Against Me, so the person taking this video might have been in the Joan Jett camp and not the Against Me camp.
Yeah, but the person taking the video was in the crowd watching the band prior to Laura walking on stage. True. So it's like,
maybe they're just like a bad,
a new,
like, videographer
is on stage now. But whatever. Anyways, I don't know. I don't want to rag too much on this because apparently all the YouTube commenters were really, really giving the videographer shit about it, and you know, I don't want to jump on that train with YouTube commenters. So yeah, kind of a weird choice of filming, but cool song. You know,
I actually was talking to John about this before we started recording about how I hadn't listened to it yet. I felt bad, and I knew that it was out, but I've just been too caught up in Laura Stevenson's new record to really give it a shot. But in about a day or two, I'll listen to it, and I'll have some kind of opinion and post on Twitter, and no one will care. But for the time being, I feel like it's probably a good song. I just don't know.
Yeah, I can see the song. I'm a pretty big Joan Jett fan, and I thought the song was really, really good. And I'm not even saying that as a Joan Jett fan, just as like a song. It's good. I think people should definitely check out the first two Joan Jett albums, Bad Reputation, and I think the first one's just called Joan Jett, or is that the second one? Anyway, the first two Joan Jett albums are flawless releases. There's also a Rarities album that has her playing with the Sex Pistols, that has her playing an Alice Cooper cover, and it's really cool. And I gotta say, Joan Jett has got a lot of talent, if you ask me, but man, she's still good-looking at 54. Like, what 54-year-old man or woman is still good-looking? Armando said that she's the George Clooney of punk rock, and I think he's right.
You know, some people just have good genetics, and they, you know, they still have that youthful appearance, you know? Meryl Streep is another one.
She looks like she's 26.
Maybe she made a deal with the punk rock gods. Maybe it's like being a Jedi, and so she's like a Jedi master. And so she meets with other, like, force ghosts, like the force ghosts of, like, Joe Strummer and, just all the other greats, and they kind of empower her to keep her alive as long as possible to spread the goodwill of punk or something.
See, when you said she made a deal with the punk rock god, I thought you meant Lemmy.
Well, I was going to say, if the punk rock gods keep you young, how do you explain Iggy at this point?
He's still alive. That's how you explain Iggy.
I guess.
Because he's fallen out of favor. He's clearly a Sith.
Oh, man. So I guess in semi-related news, Mikey Erg just announced a tour of Canada. And Mikey Erg's been active on a lot of things lately. He's got a new band called Boat Party or something. He's got a new 7-inch coming out pretty soon. And he's also, we actually just wrapped up a campaign with him trying to get him elected to the drummer of Against Me. I don't know if we're going to post an article or not. I submitted one. We'll see if it runs or not. But as I'm sure a lot of the Punk News listeners know, we ran a campaign basically saying that Against Me should make Mikey Erg their drummer. We got 1,000 signatures last week. I think I mailed it out to Laura Jane Grace and the rest of Against Me at their home out in Gainesville. So only time will tell. What do you guys? Are you guys excited for the tour? Mikey Erg's hitting up Pooza Fest for one, and then it looks like he's going to be all the way across Canada. So Adam, maybe you'll get to meet up with him.
You know, but shit, we're sponsoring the tour. Mainly because the buddy of mine is the promoter who put together the tour. So yeah, I hope that I get some. You know, what the hell is that?
I blew my nose.
Thanks, dude.
I kind of pictured you eating like an entire chicken as we were doing this. Anyways, yeah, I know I'm hoping that I get some you know, consensual, non-sexual Mikey Erg time during this thing, because yeah, I feel like we have a horse in this race, I guess, that we're helping putting this thing on. So yeah, he's going to be in St. Catharines playing at my, you know, one of my favorite local personal venues, which is the Mansion House, which is one of the oldest bars in Canada. So that'll be
the
cool.
Mansion House.
The Mansion House. Yes. Anyway, so yeah, so he'll be here playing, and I don't know if I'm going to actually get to Pooza myself. So it'd be cool to see him there, because he was a riot at Pooza last year. He played this one, I can't remember the name of the venue, but he played with kind of just like a bunch of other kind of like quasi solo acts, like the dude from Smoker Fire played, and Vic Gregario from the Slackers played, and Mikey Erg, and
actually Ben Hawes. I think it's pronounced Ruggiero.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Ruggiero?
Yeah. All right.
I pronounced Dave Hawes right when I said it there, so yeah, that's all I care about. I usually call him Dave House, and I feel like a dick afterwards.
I've got a funny Dave Howes, Mikey Erg story. When we were really pushing the Mikey Erg campaign, Dave Howes sent Mikey Erg a Twitter saying, "Forget tuning against me. When are you going to come out with your solo record?" And so I sent a tweet, if you will, to Dave Howes. I said, "I tell you what happens to people that get in the way of this campaign, but I'm sure I don't need to do that." And you know what? Dave Howes, he got quiet real quick.
He got quiet real quick.
He got quiet real quick. You do not mess with the Punk News campaign machine, Armando.
It's the Punk News political party machine.
You know Jimmy Hoffa?
Yeah, I knew of him.
We did that.
We did that before we were even an organization. We were doing things.
Breaking news: we made Jimmy Hoffa disappear in the 70s.
Before the internet.
Adam, do you know who Jimmy Hoffa is? Is that like strictly an American thing?
I know who Jimmy Hoffa is, mainly because of The Simpsons and other American TV shows that have talked about Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, there we go. Oh, shit, okay, there, I found the Pooza thing from last year. Yeah, it was Mikey Erg, PJ Bond, who was fucking awesome.
Who is PJ Bond? I hear that name all the time.
He's the son of James Bond.
Oh, so he's 008.
Yes.
Oh, both of those jokes were bad. So anyways, PJ Bond is pretty awesome. Kind of like a solo singer-songwriter thing. I know he was touring with Austin Lucas, and not entirely kind of dislike Austin Lucas, but like less like overtly country than that. But just, you know, that kind of like guy from a punk rock background who's kind of doing like a solo thing with guitar, and he's, you know, he was just kind of like wandering around the crowd as he was playing and like shouting in people's faces. Like it was just a good set, and I didn't know anything by him going into it, but it just kicked ass. So yeah, go see PJ Bond. Anyways, yeah, so him, Vic, Dave Hawes, Joe McMahon from Smoker Fire. Yeah, that was a cool little set there. So there we go. So anyways, yeah, Mikey, you're looking forward to that. I still don't feel like I know a lot of Mikey's solo stuff. I know a lot of his stuff from the Ergs. I know he plays some of that stuff solo, so I'm kind of curious to kind of hear kind of how that set would go.
I think he only has like 6 recorded studio tracks under his own name, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, the only times I've ever seen Mikey Erg do solo sets, he's pretty much just done like 90% Ergs covers.
I saw him solo at the Asian Man, was it 15th anniversary?
Yeah.
He did about half solo stuff. And then he did about half Erg stuff. He closed with Pray for Rain, which is a pretty good song. I got to say, I like the Fucker Fur 7 that she put out. And there's rumors he's going to put out another one. And I think that's funny, but I think it's pretty good music, too.
You know, I think this is a good time to bring this up because someone had asked it on Punk News in the comments there for this story. Is they were like, why Mikey Erg? Like, why is Mikey Erg the mascot for Punk News? And at this point, I just kind of... Well, I don't think he is, but even at this point, I just kind of say, like, well, why not? You know?
He doesn't meet the height requirement.
Like, yeah, like, who else is going to be the mascot from Punk News? Let it be Mikey Erg until we find someone better.
Who else could we, like, in theory, have as a mascot? See, now I'm curious. Like, is there anyone else that could even, like, compare? Probably not.
I mean, you know, he's out there doing his thing. Everyone, you know, thinks he's a great guy. He's in like a whole ton of bands, and you probably like one of them. He's a good-natured sport when we're fucking around with him on the internet. So, you know, there's no one better than Mikey Erg at this point to be the Punk News mascot.
Actually, Adam, as managing editor, I'm interested in your opinion of this. Rolling Stone magazine, which I'm sure a lot of people know is like the premier music magazine, or it used to be, is they're always clear that they support the Rolling Stones, that they're pro-Rolling Stones, and they're always clear that they support Bruce Springsteen and that they're pro-Bruce Springsteen. Adam, what's your opinion of like an editorial or a publication saying they're pro a band and just being clear about that?
Oh, you're really looking to like make this a dry and boring episode for everyone after the zaniness of past weeks.
All right, change.
No. I mean, I'll answer. Don't worry, I can get dry and boring for you. No, I won't though. I think that it's a little bit different if you're, if you are like trying to be a serious news source, or if you're, you know, kind of on the entertainment news end of things, right? So, I mean, Rolling Stone's in a really interesting position there because they do a lot of really fucking serious journalism over there. And a lot of, like, the really cool stuff Rolling Stone puts out tends to have nothing to do with music at all. They're sort of like a weird split organization there where they're wearing two hats, where at one point they're investigative journalists doing, you know, I can't name any of them because, again, I'm going to put on my Canadian ignorance hat here. But, you know, they did a lot of, like, really important, you know, stories about the war and about American politics and stuff like that. So on the one hand, yeah, serious journalists who probably shouldn't be showing a bias or anything, let alone, you know, Springsteen. And on the other hand, they're a stupid music publication like the rest of us that make dumb lists of things because people like to read dumb lists of things. On our hand, we're a stupid music publication of volunteers who don't get paid for shit that, do.
Wait, you guys don't get paid?
No one gets paid. Do you get paid?
I get paid. I get a check from Auburn every week.
Adam, I'm making like six figures.
So, anyways, you are managed by someone who doesn't get paid for shit. And you know, everyone's just kind of doing this because it interests us to do it, and we feel that we're making some sort of positive contribution to the quote unquote scene. So from that perspective, yeah, we're going to be a little bit less formal, and I'm okay with that at this point. Rolling Stone, they're really, you look at a lot of the content they put out, and it's very similar to a lot of the content that, for example, like Vice has been putting out recently, where Vice goes and they try to do all this like serious investigative journalism stuff. And it's cool that they're doing that and catering to like the youth audience with it. But at the same time, how do you do that and at the same time be like an irreverent, goofy music publication? And I don't know. So we don't try to do that. We don't have the manpower to do it. Really, even if we could. So I'm okay with us having all sorts of irrational biases as part of what we do. And if you look at the rest of the punk rock world, it's not like they have all sorts of irrational, they don't have, like, you know, they all have their fucking irrational biases too. Like, you know, look at your Maximum Rock and Rolls of the world, right? Like, you know, come on, irrational biases up the wazoo over there. So, you know, the fact that we come out in, you know, smirking support of this or that artist, I'm okay with. I can sleep well at night with us doing that. I don't worry too much that I'm going to get like called before the High Council of Journalism for, I don't know.
The High Council of the Evolutionaries.
Yeah.
Armando, you don't have any bias towards any genre whatsoever, do you? You have no genre campaign standpoint, do you?
I'm very pro-ska, but other than that, no.
Do you think being pro-ska is enough to win over the punk news readership? Is that a modern platform that people can get behind?
No, it's not. Maybe in 2004 it was, but not today.
Well, speaking of a modern platform that people can get behind, Epitaph just pulled a pretty shocking maneuver, or maybe not shocking, depending on how you look at it. Just a couple of days ago, they've announced that they've signed Italian electronic artist Shy Kid X. I think it's Shy Kid X, but it might be Shy Kid X. Basically, the guy, the
D is silent, so it's like the cereal, Shy Kicks.
Shy Kicks. On a side note, I hate Kicks. Like, they always say Kicks are for kids. That cereal is terrible. Anyways, he's an EDM artist that kind of makes sort of Skrillex X kind of music with some real dubstep and other EDM influences. And, of course, as more and more people are learning, EDM stands for electronic dance music, which basically means techno. Armando, do you check this guy out? Is Epitaph trying to branch out from punk and make themselves a more stable, I guess, a wider base? Or what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they have been for a while. This isn't news to me, like, because they have a bunch of bands that aren't really punk, and they've been going in that direction. I mean, Epitaph essentially is the biggest indie label there is, I mean, to the point where they're almost on comparison with, like, a small major label, so to speak, if you want to look at it that way. Because, I mean, look, recently, they in the past couple years, like, let's see who they've signed. They've signed, obviously, you know, up-and-coming artists like Frank Turner and the Menzingers and Off With Their Heads to kind of have that punk cred. And then still kind of staying in that circle, they've even signed, like, artists who were on majors, you know, and are still big, but I guess, you know, not bringing in the sales numbers that majors would want. And so you see, like, Social D and then Weezer. And then they have a lot of, like, bands. I think they have, like, bands like The Devil Wears Prada and a lot of those, like, screamy core bands, you know? So this isn't too out of their realm. I feel like Epitaph, really, at the end of the day, is just trying to be a label that will still be around, you know, 10 to 15, 20, however many years from now.
Cricket. I just learned what EDM means. So yeah, that's honestly something.
Like EDM is getting really, really big. I don't know if it's going to be the next big trend or not. I think maybe it will, although honestly, if it was going to be the next big thing, I think it would have been the next big thing by now and not still building. So I think it might, like, kind of peter out. Although, on the other hand, guys like Deadmau5 literally get, like, $1 million a performance, and they're just DJs.
Yeah. Yeah, Deadmau5 is from the same city as me. He's like a Niagara Falls guy.
Have you ever seen Deadmau5 without his mask? Not to, like...
Like, I probably have, like, walking around in the mall or something, but not that I know.
EDM wise, Deadmau5 is huge, and he's like the coolest of the cool. But if you see him without his mask, he does not look like a cool guy. And I'm not trying to be a dick, because I'm not a cool guy either. But, like, if you look at, say, I don't know, the guy from Coldplay, he looks like a cool dude, you know? Or even Bono. Bono looks like a dick, but he still looks like a cool guy.
Bono looks like a dick, but he still looks like a cool guy.
It's those glasses. But the guy, Deadmau5 just is not that impressive looking of an individual, if you will. Although, if you're in the EDM, I guess he's extremely talented.
I mean, you know what? He looks like a dorky 30-year-old from Niagara Falls, and that's kind of like me. So,
Adam had just let us into his little secret. He is...
I am Deadmau5, yeah. You know what? It's weird. I didn't actually... to tell you kind of like how... I don't know, either how disconnected from the rest of the world I am or how this EDM craze thing kind of blew up into the mainstream seemingly out of nowhere, is I had no idea that this person was a local until, like, he had won a bunch of Grammys and the local, like, newspapers started going, hey, someone from the city did something. So I don't even know, like, does that make me out of touch or the local paper out of touch? It probably means we're all out of touch.
Honestly, here's what it means, Adam. Like, EDM is huge in L.A. It's huge in San Francisco. It's huge in other parts of the country and the world. But it's, like, a huge underground in that, like there's a lot of people that know about it and are really into it. But the people that don't know about it, like, don't know about it at all.
I mean, that's a lot of things, you know? Like, how many people, like, know about punk? I mean, like, a lot of people do, but, like, there's all that... There are people who think it died in the 80s, just like that, what's it called, that Daily Show joke.
True, but I mean, like, my mom doesn't know, like, my mom knows who the Ramones are, sort of, but she knows what the word punk means. My mom would have no idea who Deadmau5 is or what EDM is, no idea at all.
How do you know she's secretly not going to raves?
My mom might secretly be going to raves. She very well might be.
I don't know. I feel like EDM's a little bit bigger than you're giving it credit for, but I don't know. It, to an extent, yeah, you're right. It is sort of underground, and then it's like I wouldn't even say it's underground. I think people know what it is, but they usually just call it techno music.
Yeah, that term is, like, dated now. It's, like, calling, like, hip-hop rap. Like, EDM people get mad at you if you call it techno.
Yeah, but I understand. EDM people get mad at you when you say that, but people who don't care about what EDM people think say it anyway.
Honestly, I will say, and I said this exact same thing last week. I went to an EDM all-night concert or rave or whatever, and I gotta say, for dancing, it's really not the worst thing in the world to dance to, because it's basically just a beat with, like, wacky noises. So, I definitely will listen to a CD of it, but at a dance club, it's really not that bad.
Well, everything kind of has its place. I guess part of the question about this, though, is that is the place for it on Epitaph? And, yeah, I mean, you were right, Mondo, that, you know, Epitaph's been doing this kind of stuff thing for a while, where they're signing acts that have, you know, popular appeal, and, you know, it's to sell, you know, to move things, to sell CDs, and that does allow them to kind of pay to put out some of the probably less profitable stuff that we tend to think is the good stuff on Epitaph. And it was the same way that, you know, when Screamo was a thing, they had a bunch of Screamo bands, when, you know, that Strokes, the new rock and roll, whatever the fuck they were calling it, movement was happening, they were signing a bunch of bands in that realm. So it's nothing new for Epitaph to kind of be chasing whatever the popular thing is. And the one thing that kind of bugs me, though, is if you look at, like, the press release that kind of went out about this, or I assume is the press release, if you go to that music page that has the, you can stream some songs from this guy, you can find the link for it on Punk News. They have, it looks like it's like a clip out of like a press release about him that was put out by Epitaph. And shit, they talk a lot about punk in that press release. Like, they're trying to make the argument that, well, if you think about it, you know, if you really think about it, then this is pretty punk rock. And I don't know why you need to do that. Just, it's electronic dance music or whatever they want to call it, or techno or whatever, right? Like, it is what it is. It doesn't need to. I don't see why Epitaph or anyone needs to stop and to try to justify, like, hey, this could play pretty good on the Warped Tour if you think about it, or whatever they're doing. Like, no, why do you need to do that? Just let it be what it is. Well, don't be so. It sounds so fucking cowardly to have to, like, to argue why you as a music label are going to put out this piece of music from this artist, especially when you've had the history that Epitaph has of putting out music from all sorts of artists. Just put it out. And if people like it, they like it. You don't have to argue to anyone that it's punk. You're not going to convince some leather studded stereotype punk rocker at the Casualties show that this is a punk band. And they probably don't like you in the first place, Epitaph. So you don't need to do that. Like, it just, I don't know why they have to make that effort to try to equate this with punk rock. Like, it's just unnecessary. It strikes me that it seems insecure. Like, I don't know why they do it. Just let it be what it is. But, yeah. And you know, they don't need to worry about trying to sell this artist to the punk news crowd. Just, this artist has fans that are going to be from his own genre. So, you know, that, and they're not going to judge. Maybe they will, but you don't figure that they need to have that argument made to them that, hey, this is kind of punk rock, so it makes sense. So, I don't know.
Adam, I disagree, and I don't think he's got fans from his own genre necessarily. I think if Epitaph said, okay, people that like EDM, here's this brand new EDM guy, Shy Kid X, all the EDM people would say, oh, this guy's lame, or he's been done before, or whatever. But if Epitaph marks it not towards the punk news crowd, but towards the crowd that's into, like, that real screamy, electronic, crabcore kind of stuff, if they say, okay, screamy, crabcore people, here's the new thing, Shy Kid X. He's EDM and he's punk. And they just use that buzzword. Kids, impressionable young minds, 13, 14, 15, would be more likely to pick up on it than otherwise.
Yeah. Now, to be honest, I feel like you guys both make great points. You're both right in the sense that, you know, for the younger generation, younger kids, like, who are just getting into music and, you know, kind of are into that crabcore stuff, for them, they're like, ooh, punk, what's that? Oh, this guy could be punk, I'm into that, you know. And by the same regard, you know, Epitaph just kind of seems like they have to be like, oh, this is such a punk move. You know, it's like, because it's not punk, it's even more punk that we're doing this. So we've just upped our punk points 1,000-fold. You know, so I get where you're both coming from. Although I do want to point something out. an artist like Kid Shy X or, you know, like Shy Guy 69 or whatever the hell his name is. He realistically could be on the Warped Tour given the artists that play it these days.
He is going to be on the Warped Tour.
Oh, he is?
He's been confirmed for all Warped Tour dates this summer.
Oh, wow. Because I remember last year they had, like, that electronic artist Big Chocolate.
I don't think we get Top Shy Guy 69. Adam, what's happening next
time? Oh, God. I don't even know where to go with that.
We could talk about sponsorships.
Oh, God. I guess. I don't know. We can't go anywhere from there. Oh, God, all right, Shy Guy 69. So yeah.
Speaking of people blowing themselves.
Yeah, holy shit. So we have a sponsor in the Punk News Podcast for the first time in a while, which is cool because we don't actually solicit sponsors, so I don't know how this actually happens, but it happened. So, yeah, we're super excited to be back as a sponsor for Poozafest once again. This is the third year for the event, which happens in Montreal, Quebec, up here in Canada. And in the past years, it's featured bands like Lifetime, Zero Boys, The Lawrence Arms, Suicide Machines, The Queers, Hot Water Music, Coliseum, Your Landlord, everybody seems to have played this thing. It was a riot last year. So anyways, the fest is back this year. They're expanding a bit. They've got about 12 venues and more than 250 bands that they're bringing into the world capital of poutine. So this year, the event's going to go on from May 17th to the 19th. And the lineup is pretty stacked. It's got a bunch of bands getting back together, a bunch of bands that don't normally play up here coming up to play up here. So you're looking at stuff that's going to please, I think, a lot of people. Braid, Crime and Stereo, Saves the Day, Dead to Me, The Slackers, Grade, getting back. I'm glad they didn't put Grade and Braid next to each other in this thing. Masked Intruder, Mixtapes, American Steel, Good Riddance, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, Iron Sheik, Plow United, Horace Pinkard, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Wilhelm Scream, Make Do and Mend, Jersey, which is, that, you know, those are guys from Braids, or from Grade. Fuck, see, look, I did it right there. Okay, these bands have to not do that. Buck 09, look at that. Armando.
There's some
Armando, Buck 09. I
know. You know, I'm more excited about MU330, but it's still exciting to see.
And, you know, a bunch of other plans. And one of the big draws here is that a Newfound Glory are going to be there, and they're going to play their classic, well, that's what the press release here says, record Sticks and Stones from front to back. So if you're a Newfound Glory fan from the era in which that record came out, that's a big deal to you. I mean, the ska is always a big deal at this thing, and bigger, I think, than at some of the other conferences, since I've just decided that we're going to talk about ska now. And it's, Montreal has always been a big ska city. You know, this is the place where...
Scontrial,
yeah. Well, I mean, this is the place where, like, I mean, I guess it really centers around the Planet Smashers being from there, but, like, that's where Stomp Records is from, which during, like, the third wave ska thing in the late 90s, like, you know, if you were a Canadian ska band, like, the goal in life was either to get on a major label or to get on Stomp Records out of Montreal. So, you know, it's always been a big ska city, big ska market, so they always bring up a bunch of ska bands to play this thing. And there's always, like, a ton of, like, cool Quebecois bands that are playing some of the smaller stages of this, too. So, anyways, yeah, so go check out poozafest.com, and, you know, we're stoked to be sponsors, and we'll be giving away some tickets or something soon. So, yeah, that's the end of my advertisement.
Before we leave this advertising tangent, I have a question. You might know more because you're Canadian, but is Stomp Records still a thing?
I feel that they are a thing in that they're not a thing.
Is it mostly that they just, like, sell whatever back catalog they have but not putting out new releases?
Well, I think that, well, like, Stomp is they have, like, they also trade under the name the Union Label Group. So... They were far more active a few years ago. I'm pretty sure they're still technically a company. They still technically, like, sell stuff from the catalog. There's a couple bands that they put out stuff from regularly still. There's a band called The Brains, which is, like, a psychobilly band that they put out stuff from.
And yeah.
There's a few kind of, like, ska reggae kind of stuff that they put out still. The Beatdown is one that they do, and so yeah, they're still like a fairly regular stream of records that are coming out there, but it's not at the level that it was, you know, back a few years ago. But I think that's, you know, I think they're one of those labels that you know, they probably don't have a whole ton of expenses at this point, so they don't, you know, they put out what they want to put out, and they're not really trying to like make a living for 25 people from doing what they do.
Yeah,
talking out of my ass. I might be wrong about this, but that's my impression of it.
I would laugh if Stomp was secretly like just a distribution label for all these huge artists in the U.S. for some random reason.
Yeah, I want to say, and I might be totally wrong about this, but I feel that Stomp has some sort of distribution deal up here with Universal or one of the majors or something like that. So they've offloaded, I think, a lot of like the costs of like manufacturing, getting stuff into stores. So they kind of like have like, you know, they can release the things that they want to release, and it works out for them. But again, I'm just speculating about the business. I don't really know any of these things, so like, I don't want to...
The business.
I don't want to, like, offend anyone. It's a business.
It was the way you said it. It was like, the business.
The business. Yes, the UK band The Business, I speculate about. Do you guys remember The Business?
Yeah, actually, I have a split with them at Lars Fredriksson's old firm Casuals.
Yeah, they had a fucking awesome song on one of those Give Them the Boot records.
Yeah. No, I actually have a somewhat entertaining story about The Business that the mixtapes told me.
We have to hear this.
Okay, so we were hanging out at Crazy Fest in 2011. Shit was pretty crazy, dude. It was like the weekend where that everyone thought it was going to be Armageddon again. I feel like every year we have an Armageddon that's supposed to happen. And so, like, the day the world was supposed to end, as the sun was... Well, I'll go into this part, and then I'll go into the funny business part. But so the day the world was supposed to end, as the sun was setting and as Anti-Flag made note of it, a huge, giant, like thunder cloud, like, came out and was like, boom, and it started raining, and everyone freaked out for a second. But back to the main subject at hand is we were talking to mixtapes, and I guess, like, they know this one kid in their area... Who he's like a promoter, or at least he claims to be a promoter, and so he's always talking about all these bands that he knows. And then finally, someone asked him like, well, what bands do you know? Like who have you booked? Like, who could you book a show with? And so he goes, oh, The Business. And it's like, out of like all the bands to randomly say that you know, like while living in Ohio, the band you pick is The Business. It's kind of a stretch. But the best part is that they, like, you know, people are, he's telling this to them, and he's very skeptical. Or, you know, the people on mixtapes are very skeptical about, you know, oh, he just happens to know The Business. So then he goes, oh, you don't believe me? Let me call them right now. So he calls some random number on his phone. And the first thing out of his mouth is, hello, The Business, it's me. He addresses the band as if, like, they're just called The Business. Like, they don't have names.
Well, getting back to business, the second track on tonight's Punk News podcast is by Crazy in the Brains. Crazy in the Brains is a pretty wild band. They're pretty new, too. What they do is they take kind of classic garage punk, but they put in a xylophone, too, which sounds weird, but actually it's pretty wild, wacky, and fun stuff. They got a brand new album coming out, I think next month, called Let Me Go on Baldy Longhair Records. Check out the cassette version, too, because it comes with like 16 bonus tracks. But this is off the LP and the cassette version, and it is called It's All Right.
I got nothing going on. You got nothing going on. I need something to do. You need something to do. You should know by now that man in the Bugatti. He's a member of the you like, do whatever, baby, cause I, oh, I don't care, yeah, yeah, it's alright, yeah, 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 oh, yeah.
And welcome back to the third and final part of tonight's Punk News Podcast. I guess Saturday Night Live has been ripping up the Punk News world because they've delivered their second punk-related parody. It's called The History of Punk, and it's focusing on a fictional character created by Fred Armisen. And it is called, what's the name of the character in this thing? Well, crap, I lost the name. But it's basically a parody of Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols.
Oh, it was something in the Bizarros.
Yeah, it was like Sly Sneedly or something. Anyways, the joke was is that he was a big fan of Margaret Thatcher, despite being punk rock. Some people thought this was funny, and some people just thought it wasn't funny at all. Honestly, my opinion was I didn't think it was that funny. It references punk rock, but there's no real jokes there. And just pure references isn't in of itself funny. But, I mean, I guess I give them credit for trying.
No, you know what? I thought this was super amusing. Maybe not, like, chuckle funny, but I'm a huge sucker for those kind of, like, the documentaries that they're parodying there.
Yeah.
You know, like, Filth and the Fury by the Sex Pistols, or what was it, Best Way to the World was the one for The Clash, I think. We're just these kind of like retrospective, you know, we're going to show some old guy sitting in a studio talking about something, interspliced back to some footage from the day, everyone's reminiscing. I totally eat those up. So this was done to a T in that style.
Mm.
So I don't know that I was super amused with it for that reason. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like belly laugh or anything, but.
True,
yeah, also
true.
It was Ian Rubbish and the Bizarros.
That's it, yeah.
And, you know, I thought it was pretty funny on a scale of 1 to 10. It hovered between a 7 and an 8, but not so much because of the whole Margaret Thatcher aspect. But, you know, I just think the way it came off, like the way they were able to present it, you know, somehow made the whole overall joke funnier than it actually was, you know.
And that was really Steve Jones from the Pistols that was involved, too. So,
yeah,
you know,
I thought that
they,
was
they made their effort.
Yeah. I think the funniest part is like when he has his comeback and they're like, and I thought he was back, but then I heard the B side, and then the B side is Sweet Old Iron Lady.
I did like Armisen's impression of like, you know, like a 77, you know, UK punk singer is really fucking dead on too. I mean, like I know he's got like musical pedigree and all that, so you know, of course he can pull that off, but just like. If you like close your eyes and listen to like his first few lines when they're showing like the mock live footage that they did of it, that could have been out of like any old clip of like the Clash or the Pistols or anyone playing back then. So like, I don't know, it was really well done. Just like the accent that he took on, I'm just like, yeah, that was that got my respect watching this. I'm like, I don't care if this isn't funny, because that is spot fucking on.
He is a good actor. He did that Johnny Rotten thing that I don't think a whole lot of people do, is where like elongate like the last syllable of the last word. Like I forget exactly what he says, but like Johnny Rotten would say, "You have to show your elders respect," and he like does that, which is like a really weird way to speak, you know.
And, yeah, that was cool.
Saturday Night Live actually does have sort of a pedigree of punk rock, as I'm sure a lot of the Punk News listeners know. Way back in 1980 or 1981, John Belushi basically agreed to co-host after leaving Saturday Night Live on the agreement with Lorne Michaels of Saturday Night Live that Fear and Minor Threat could play at the show. And what happened was they brought Minor Threat. It was just Fear.
But Ian MacKay was there, and he like totally stage dives.
And the reason that happened is because Lorne Michael caught up Ian MacKay because he wanted him to bring a whole bunch of punk rock people, because somebody told Lorne Michael that Minor Threat was a bunch of punk rock guys. So Ian MacKay was there, and then what happened was is they got a little wild on stage, and like a camera got knocked into. So they like locked all the punk rock kids into like a place, and then eventually like let them go. And so that's a really interesting story that people should look into. So,
yeah, that video is really cool too, because they're going nuts. And I was like, dude, like it makes every other like Saturday Night Live like performance pale in comparison.
It does. True indeedy. I guess second to last story is I guess less wild and rough and nasty, more sweet and sensitive, is Lars Stevenson and The Can have a new acoustic song out. It is called The Move. It's off their upcoming LP, The Wheel, which Armando, you said you've been checking out.
Yeah, it's a great record. I've listened to it about two or three times, like, straight through. And I enjoy it. I'll buy it when they come through, I believe, next month through my area. But I feel like I should have pre-ordered it, but at the same time, I was like, I want to buy it while they're on tour because it just means that it helps make them more money as they're on the road. And I want to know why they called it The Wheel. But other than that, I would say it's a good record. It'll definitely make my top 10, and who knows? This could be the record that might get Laura on the radar of certain people who might not listen to her.
Oh, man, actually, the AV Club was playing one of her tracks, which I thought was highly surprising. The Onion AV Club.
Yeah. You know, and maybe that's like, that's the beginning of the transition to her. Because I feel like Laura Stevenson plays like a brand of music that could be pretty big, like in that indie, like, you know, pop rock scene. But because she kind of grew up in the punk scene, that's who's kind of taken to her thus far.
Do you think it's too cutesy wootsy to get really big?
I don't think so. I don't think it's cutesy wootsy at all. Dude. It's really? It's very serious. Like, some of the songs you listen to are very deep. Like, you know, like, I've cried. I mean, no joke. You know, some of those songs are about murder and stuff, dude.
Well, I think that what you're getting at there is that, like, there was a time in, shit, I don't even know what year I'm going to say this was. It was in the 90s when, like, the twee movement, right? Where it was,
that's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it could happen. I mean, it's cool that the AV Club is taking notice of her. I mean, like, I've always kind of felt that way about Laura because I feel that there's, like, a lot of indie band. There's, like it's solo indie rock kind of acts that I kind of see it at shows around here that do kind of a similar thing. But, you know, no one on Punk News, for example, would care. And it's more because, like, they didn't kind of grow to that scene. So it's kind of neat to see. You know, see her career kind of developing kind of through the vector of punk rock just because that's where her background is. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, like, the rest of the music world, I guess, that doesn't have that point of reference, you know, takes up her stuff.
Yeah, there's a pretty heavy Laura Stevenson Bob the Music Industry connection, right? Like, wasn't she, like, sort of in Bob the Music Industry?
She was in it for a while, and at least one or two tours I saw her playing guitar. And on one of those tours, Laura Stevenson and the Cans was technically just Bomb the Music Industry.
Oh, and they played together, right?
Yeah. Well, it was more so, I'm trying to think.
Like I saw that tour in Santa Clara, or maybe it was San Jose. It was Laura Stevenson and the Cans, Bomb the Music Industry, and Classics of Love before their first record came out. It was pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, you got lucky. You guys got Classics of Love. And, you know, we didn't get Classics. I feel like Classics of Love will play with, like, any Asian man band that's on tour, like, out in this area, but only in the Bay. Yeah, and well, then,
yeah. I mean, the answer is yes. It's because they don't, like, they all have, like, jobs and stuff, so they can't just go on tour. Like, they're like, the hard girls are all, like, 25 to, like, almost 30. And yeah. They've got, like, jobs. They're not, like, 22 we can just skip off. And Jesse Michaels actually lives down in L.A. now, and he's going to school there. So.
Yeah, no, I know that. But so it's funny to me that they'll never, like they'll never play, like, Southern California despite being so close to it.
Well, true that.
That's what I'm getting at. It's like, I mean, like, if you can get the time off for one show, in theory, you could get the time off for, like, 2 to 3 shows. And I'm not saying do it all the time, but, like, literally the last time they played Southern California might have been 3 or 4 years ago. It's like, I think they're overdue considering we're only 8 hours away.
Yeah, true that.
So, since we got you on the podcast and I'm here and you're a big, huge nerd, I kind of want to talk to you about this Patton Oswalt thing. Did you watch this?
Yes, I did. The what's it called? The Parks and Rec. Where he's like, he's making a guest star as, like, this town, like, citizen of Pawnee who wants, he found a law wherein as long as he keeps talking at the public forum, he can filibuster for as long as he's talking. And so, you know, he starts going on his pitch for Star Wars Episode 7, and I guess they never gave Patton a script, so it was like 8 minutes of improv, and it's amazing.
And I have to say that two things that really struck me about this and that you're going to appreciate is, the one, it super bugged me that he said the X-Men were flying in a Quinjet.
Yes, that I was like
this whole thing is ridiculous, but ah!
I mean, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because it was all improv, but I was like, they have the Blackbird, not the Quinjet.
Yeah, so that bugged me. And the thing that didn't bug me that I thought was super impressive, this being improv, was Patton Oswalt could name the Infinity Gems.
Yeah.
And I don't know why this is important to me, but it is.
I feel I have to rewatch it, but I think he randomly named a sixth gem. I could be wrong. I could be wrong on this.
I think it was a Shy Boy 69.
So anyways, just yeah, people of the internet, go find that that clip of Patton Oswalt improvising about comics and Star Wars and stuff on Parks and Rec, because it's awesome.
And be sure to watch the 1 hour special of Parks and Rec on Thursday night NBC lineup, 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Thank you for Parks and Rec for sponsoring this podcast.
Thank you, Amy Poehler, for donating your millions of dollars to us.
And last thing on the Punk News Podcast, by the time you hear this will already occurred, but this very weekend is Record Store Day. Are you guys excited? Because I am, honestly. It seems more and more people hate Record Store Day, and I do have to say, this year, the pickings are kind of slim. There's not really anything that's really blowing my mind. I usually love Record Store Day because it's an excuse to put out things that wouldn't normally warrant being put out because they're not profitable enough. Namely, the Off Live 7-inch, which was awesome. The Tegan and Sarah Live 7-inch, which was awesome. The Beastie Boys Remix 12-inch, that was awesome.
I thought you were going to say the Live 7-inch. I was like, I feel like Record Store Day is nothing but Live 7-inch.
I wish it was the Nobody 7-inch. I loved all those records. I still listen to them. This year, really, the only thing I'm interested in is like the Tegan and Sarah Remix 12-inch, and like that's it. So I love the concept of Record Store Day, just not a whole lot of things sparking my interest this time around.
Now, I'm just scrolling through the list here, and I'm seeing what's really sticking out to me. So let's see here. What is coming?
There might be a rare George Clinton 7-inch with Sly Stone. If that exists, then I'm going to get that.
There's only, like, two releases that I'm super stoked on, and it's the Evan Weiss and then, what's his face, Mike Kinsella from American Football and Cap'n Jazz. Their band, There. They have their debut LP coming out, or EP or whatever. And then the Touche Amore title fight split. And then other than that, there's not really anything else that I, like, have to have or really want. But I'm excited to go to – because there's a lot of local record stores in my area. And one of the better ones is this place called Dr. Strange Records.
Oh, and, yeah,
they're having a huge – well, not a huge – a fairly big sale. Like, everything in the store is 15% off, even the exclusives. You know, so I think it's awesome that they're willing to, you know, give us a deal when you go to other stores and there's like a heavy markup.
Yeah.
You know,
the one thing that kind of drives me nuts about this is, like, do we need like a Pink Floyd release on for this?
Yes.
Like, do these bands that you know clearly don't need to drive people into stores anymore because they're basically like small countries in and of themselves, do they need to have like a special rare, you know, piece of vinyl for people to chase? Like, you know, I'm looking at the list and like some of these bands don't exist. Like Elliott Smith is dead. Why does he need a Record Store Day release? Who is that profiting? Like, I don't know.
I was like he doesn't, but his label does.
I suppose so, right? So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be that guy that's like, oh, this was better when it was a smaller thing, because I wasn't fucking buying Record Store Day releases when it was a smaller thing in any case. So, you know, it is what it is. It's just, I don't know, it's weird for me to pull up the list and it's to be like Pink Floyd. Oh, like, okay, Ringo Starr. Like,
I didn't know people cared about Ringo Starr, period.
Beatles fans are maniacs, man. Maniacs.
I guess. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not, but I feel like Ringo is like the Donatello of the Beatles.
Okay, let's see here. Okay, Rocket from the Crypt, Group Sounds, reissue for the first time on vinyl. I would buy that if it wasn't a Record Store Day release. So, all right, that's okay. You know, there are records. You could go buy them.
This reminds me of an article that Yancey posted a while ago about how there's now, like, bigger labels are making, like, a false demand for re-releases of stuff that you can still find, like, in the dollar bin.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Norman. I got so excited at that topic, I had to interrupt you, but I apologize. Go ahead.
Because wasn't the main focus, was it Kenny Loggins or what's his name? That put out The Gambler?
Kenny Rogers.
Oh, Kenny Rogers. I knew it was Kenny, and I knew it had a G in there, but it wasn't Kenny G. But yeah, something like, they re-released that. But dude, I found 5 copies in like a 99-cent bin. Like, why do we need a re-released version of this?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I think it's stupid to re-release things that are widely available on vinyl, just have them on vinyl again. What I like about Record Store Day is that the release of new material. I don't even actually care about the format itself. I just love the new and rare material, you know. But I agree.
Yeah.
It's like, it's stupid to put out like Sgt. Pepper on vinyl again. It's like, why, you know?
It's not that hard to find now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I said, like, the only 2 releases I care about are like actual new music, you know? And then both of them are being re-released after Record Store Day, just not on color vinyl. Yeah. So, you know, the real incentive is to get it now so they can be like, yeah, I got the color version because I'm a dick.
Well, speaking of dicks, the last track for tonight is by Rudimentary Peni. Rudimentary Peni is a band that's only semi-active now. But the Southern Records is re-releasing their entire discography. There's only been 1 record released so far, and that's Pope Adrian 37th Psych Christiatric. And that's a very unique and difficult record. It was written while main Rudimentary Peni member Nick Blinko was held against his will in a mental institution under English law. While he was in the mental institution, he basically thought he was Pope Adrian the 4th, which apparently in his mind is the same as Pope Adrian the 37th. And he wrote an album in the perspective as Pope Adrian the 4th. And the album is a very excellent but also very difficult record. I guess it's strange that Southern chose to lead off with this record because it's one of the most challenging records I've heard by far, although it is a very good record. This track is called The Pope With No Name. If you listen closely during the entire record, underneath the actual song, you can hear the phrase, Papas Adrianus, Papas Adrianus, Papas Adrianus. That loop runs throughout the whole 45-minute record or so. And so the record kind of creates a challenge. If you can focus on the music, it's a great record. But if you get sucked into the repeating loop underneath, it's maddening. So it's almost like a game. It's like, can you manage to stay sane while listening to this record? Or will you succumb to madness? Which I think might be a parallel to Blinko's own situation at the time. At any rate, this track is called The Pope With No Name, Don't Lose Your Mind. Smoke Laramie cigarettes, too. Smooth, cold, refreshing.
And don't forget to also drink Pepsi, now the newest sponsor of the Punk News Podcast.
The choice for the punk generation.
Last, first, same as the worst.
Adrianus, Papas, Adrianus, Papas, Adrianus, Papas, Adrianus, Papas, Adrianus, Papas.
My demand! My demand! My demand! hip-hop journey in the 7th century rental torment of virgin births.
And that concludes this week's episode of the Punk News Podcast. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of those making them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions, ideas, concepts, or musings of punknews.org. If you want to get in contact with us, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Until then, we will see you next week. So stay free, stay cheery, stay in a good mood, and most importantly, stay fresh. We will see you, you marvelous darling, next week.